The abuse of the abused. That's a phrase I use a lot when I'm on Twitter, when I'm talking about abuse with people that I know. But what exactly do I mean by that? To a large degree, the abuse of the abused explains why abuse is such a big deal, why it's such a big deal for survivors in particular, why it's so hard to get over what was done to us because of what was done to us again when we tried to get help. And this gets into issues of PTSD, complex PTSD, anxiety, depression, and then problems that you'll often see in survivors, bankruptcy, divorce, estrangement from friends and family. With the advent of the abuse summit at the end of this week in Rome, I wanted to address the question of the abuse of the abused and explain what I mean by that, because I think that is the problem that needs to be solved. And I have questions about whether that problem is actually going to be solved in Rome or even addressed in Rome. I've tried to talk to Cardinal Kupic about this, but they never contacted me back. I live in St. Louis and could have driven up to Chicago in 4 or 5 hours, no big deal. I'm trying to bring this to people's attention, so here we are, you know, a few days before the abuse summit in Rome, and I'm going to put this video together to explain what I mean by the abuse of the abused. First and foremost, things are better. I live in St. Louis. We have Protecting God's Children. By and large, that program is working. People are taking it seriously. I believe the children are safer. I believe that fewer abusers are getting away with stuff because people are taking it seriously. Protecting God's Children is training people and educating people, and things are significantly better than they were when I was a child. They're not perfect. There are questions about, you know, how often the training should be held and how long it is, and that leads to complaints in people. I still know of priests who have used phrases like safe environment crap. That's a problem. But by and large, children are safer. And that's what confuses me about the abuse summit, because it seems like the idea is to solve a problem that has already been largely addressed, if not solved. Things could be better, but that's not the big problem. The big problem is the abuse of the abused. What happens to survivors when they trust the church, when they believe what the church is saying, and try to get help? And I can tell you it's a terrible ordeal, and it's what I experienced trying to get help from the Archdiocese of St. Louis, in my case, far, far, far outweighs what my abuser, Father Leroy Valentine, did to me. That was just mostly just physical stuff. Created problems in the marriage with intimacy and sex and that kind of stuff, but, you know, what was done to me by Cardinal Dolan, Regali Burke, Archbishop Carlson, that stuff is much worse, and it affects me far more deeply. And as proof of that, as proof that that is a problem, I submit the picture that I use on the cover of this video. So in September of 2018, the Archdiocese of St. Louis held a mass of reparation for survivors, which was kind of weird because I wasn't invited, and I don't know of any survivors who were invited. And I came to learn ultimately that a mass of reparation isn't for survivors, it's to say sorry to God. But nobody said sorry to the survivors. And I, to be clear, I've never talked to Archbishop Carlson or Bishop Rivetuso of the Archdiocese of St. Louis. Nobody has reached out to me to apologize to me. Even when the Archdiocese of St. Louis has admitted it happened, they still lie. They can't help it. They can't help themselves but lie. So my plan was for that massive reparations to show up with two photographs. One was me as an altar server with a couple other guys and Father Valentine. The other was a picture of me with Father Valentine and again a couple other guys on a trip to a mud cave that Father Valentine took us to on December 26, 1980. I know that because there was a date on the back of the picture. And it's funny, and I'll address it in another video. The flannel shirt guy just got in touch with me on Tuesday, and then I called the number shirt guy on Wednesday, and we're talking and exchanging names and trying to understand, you know, while this video addresses the abuse of the abused and what happened since 2002 when I've been trying to get help, I've got a lot more information, a lot more developments on exactly what happened back then from the fall of 1977 through at least December 26, 1980, and what was done to me and to us and to others by Father Leroy Valentine. And that could be a body count of 100 or more. But as this picture shows, and it perfectly encapsulates the response of the Archdiocese of St. Louis to survivors of abuse is to just ignore us. When I went to that mass and I stood there holding those two pictures, the pictures of me as a survivor or as a child, there were a bunch of lay people who came up to me, employees of the Archdiocese of St. Louis, a couple nuns, a cop who was there who actually invited me in. But as the picture shows, I was completely ignored by the priests present, who are priests of the Archdiocese of St. Louis and, you know, kind of scattered throughout the diocese. There were 30 or 40 priests just 30 feet away from me, you know, it was just one flight of three or four steps just away from me. I was standing on the sidewalk as close as I could to the steps leading up to the Cathedral Basilica, and they were just, like I said, 30 feet away from me. And there were 30 or 40 guys, you know, who came out and milled around for about 5 minutes while they were lining up to go into the Mass. None of the priests would so much as look at me. And that, of course, is also true of Archbishop Carlson, who was at the end of the procession. All the priests kind of lined up in two columns and then processed in, and Archbishop Carlson was at the end of the procession, and he ended up about 20 feet away from me when everyone was lined up to be in the procession, and he never looked at me. And I'm quite sure he saw me, he just ignored me. Because I've got another picture that shows him emerging from the church, standing next to the police officer I spoke to, and next to the priests as they're lined up and as they're entering the Cathedral Basilica of St. Louis. And Archbishop Carlson is looking right at me. I'm just standing, probably at that point, I'm probably about 30 or 40 feet away from him, just right there holding my two pictures. And he just completely ignored me. And it's a perfect encapsulation and representation of what it's like for a survivor to try to get help from the Archdiocese of St. Louis. And I know enough other survivors to know that survivors are facing that situation, that kind of treatment in other dioceses and archdioceses as well, which is why I'm here doing this video. So let's talk about exactly what I mean by the abuse of the abused. And I'll talk about this in more depth in some of my other videos, but I want to give you an overview of what I consider to be the abuse of the abused and all the different things that were done to me and that affected me deeply, and that affected me far more deeply than being sexually exploited, sexually abused, sexually assaulted, raped by a priest. All that was nothing. It's nothing compared to what happened when I tried to get help. I wish I'd never tried to get help. It was the biggest mistake that I made, was trying to get help from the Archdiocese of St. Louis. I should have just dealt with the sexual and intimacy problems that I had. Although it's not completely true, because by the summer of 2007, I was really starting to fall apart. Panic attacks and depression, and I was suffering from PTSD and complex PTSD. But that was after I tried to get help from the Archdiocese of St. Louis in 2002. And so essentially what happened in early March 2002, the piece ran in the New York Times explaining that Father Valentine was accused of being an abuser. St. Louis Post-Dispatch picked that up, the St. Louis media picked it up, and then calls were put out for survivors to contact the Circuit Attorney's Office, Jennifer Joyce, and to call the Archdiocese of St. Louis. As I discuss in my video on Cardinal Dolan, Cardinal Dolan called me back within a day or so of my calling into the hotline for the Archdiocese of St. Louis. I told him my memories, asked him if he thought it meant anything, and he immediately said it didn't. That Father Valentine, he couldn't do what was being alleged. I did end up talking to another psychologist. He sold her as being independent, but she was actually the assistance coordinator, I believe, for the Archdiocese of St. Louis, Nancy Brown. She again told me nothing happened, that I was just misinterpreting what had been done. Which is weird, because at the end of March 2002, Father Valentine resigned. That story only ran in the New York Times and the Southeastern Missourian. The St. Louis papers didn't run it, so I didn't know what happened. But so Father Valentine resigned, I think, on March 27, 2002. And then Bishop Dolan, now Cardinal Dolan, never called me back to notify me, to let me know that that had happened, or to much less to say, hey, you know that stuff I said that didn't happen? Well, Valentine just resigned for cause, so, you know, maybe we ought to talk about this some more, because maybe it did happen. And I happen to know the guy who called in and forced the resignation of Father Valentine. He actually called into Cardinal Dolan's office, he called into Cardinal Dolan's office and basically said, Valentine needs to go or else. But I was never, offered assistance or counseling of any form when Father Valentine resigned. Like I said, I was never even notified of it. And then, I don't know exactly what happened, but all the records of my conversations with Cardinal Dolan and Nancy Brown were purged from the files. I've talked to Bishop Rick Sticca about this, and he's seen Valentine's file, and my name in my call and allegation are not in Father Valentine's file. I don't know who purged the file. Wouldn't surprise me if Dolan did, in order to kind of hide his connection between Father Valentine and himself and the crisis. But that came up again in May of 2011, May 9th, 2011, when I met with a review team. I'd gone back to them and basically asked them. I was falling apart at the time. Unemployed, divorced, depressed, anxious, PTSD, couldn't leave the house, afraid to leave the house. And I basically went back to them and I gave them the same memories. Story never changed. I just remembered one more thing about wrestling, how Valentine would wrestle and how that was one of the ways that he would one of the ways that he would touch us and grope us. His hand would slip and he would accidentally touch us down there. So I talked to a review team, and there were two lawyers in that review team, which was against the policy of the Archdiocese of St. Louis, and I think against the 2002 Dallas Charter. There wasn't just one lawyer there, there were two lawyers there, and I was never offered the opportunity to bring a lawyer or told that there were going to be lawyers there. But then I told them about my interactions with Cardinal Dolan and with Nancy Brown in 2002, March, you know, early to mid-March. They told me they had no record of that. I assume because the file had been purged by Cardinal Dolan, I assume. I actually thought they were lying to me at the time. I didn't know that my allegation had been purged from Father Valentine's file. I thought they were lying, but you don't want to talk about gaslighting and how something makes you question your reality. The review team's telling me on May 9th, 2011, that they had no record of my conversations with Dolan and Nancy Brown. That just destroyed me because it made me question everything. And that meeting didn't end much better. It was cut short by Deacon Phil Hengen. I wasn't allowed to tell everything. And then at the end of the meeting, Deacon Hengen gave me a book called Man Enough by Frank Pittman, which basically blamed everything on my father. Said all my issues were just related to my dad. They weren't. I read that. You want to talk about a psychological toll? I ended up reading that book about 100 times because at the time, I took Deacon Hengen seriously and kind of compulsively, repetitively reread and reread that book, trying to figure out why he had given it to me. Because when I was reading it, none of it fit the description of what of the problems that I was having. Turns out it was a red herring. 2 months later, I had to call Deacon Hengen, and in that conversation, he told me that he wanted to talk to my psychologist. So I very quickly went to my psychologist's office, signed a release, made sure that everything was done that needed to be done. And I actually remember this very clearly because I had to do it twice because my psychologist, I basically gave my psychologist a blank check the first time, and my psychologist ended up wanting to kind of tighten things up. So we tore up the first agreement and then filled out another one. And then I gave both Deacon Hengen and my psychologist each other's contact information, and Deacon Hengen never called in. Which again is another gaslighting thing. And it created tensions and stresses between my psychologist and me and ended up destroying our relationship because I didn't know who to trust. In retrospect, it makes sense that Deacon Hengen would be lying about calling rather than my psychologist because my psychologist didn't really have an incentive to lie. 2012 passed, and then in May 2013, the Archdiocese of St. Louis announced that they had permanently removed Father Valentine. They never called me to warn me about that, to let me know it was going to happen. No heads up. My psychologist actually had to call me. The second psychologist I was working with at the time after moving on from my first, she had to call me and warn me and let me know that there were pieces in the Post-Dispatch and the Riverfront Times. And that was bad enough to not get any heads up, much less, he's permanently removed, let's help you now. I had no communication whatsoever with the Archdiocese of St. Louis before, during, or after the permanent removal of Father Leroy Valentine. I was just left to twist in the wind. And what's worse, and another gaslighting thing, in the release announcing the permanent removal of Father Valentine, Deacon Phil Hengen talked about how the permanent removal of Father Leroy Valentine was being done based on an allegation of someone who'd come forward in the summer of 2012. Remember, I came forward on May 9th, 2011. So who's this? Who's the other person who came forward? Who's the other person who came forward in the summer of 2012? Are they lying about when I came forward to try to make themselves look more responsive? I've thought about that lately. But at the time, you know, I was just desperate. I'm like, I wanted to ask them, you know, who was it who came forward? You know, was it this guy? Was it this guy? I've got this list in my head of guys that I know who I suspect had been abused. But that just, again, that just absolutely drove me crazy, not knowing that. You know, there's another survivor out there, and not only did they not contact me or offer me help, but they didn't even mention my allegation in the press release. And that got me into this whole pattern of, you know, do I even exist? Is this even happening? You know, did I die at some point and I'm just living, am I just a ghost living in the world? It was horrible. Then at the end of 2013, I went to Monsignor Richard Haneke, who I knew from St. Elizabeth of Hungary. We Mary Queen of Peace, my former parish, rented the St. Elizabeth field, so I did a lot of work there, got to know Monsignor Haneke, came to find out he was vicar for priests and a Monsignor, so I went to him to try to go over the head of Deacon Hangen, who was just giving me the runaround, just a total obstruction. Monsignor Haneke just referred me back to Hangen, who was totally, you know, he was just giving me the runaround. He was worthless. And that was a really bad time of the year, because then, so Haneke refers me back to Hangen, and Hangen won't do anything. He won't call Doug. A couple times he asked for a treatment plan, but never offered to pay for it, which is a huge problem, given that at the time, and still, I've got like $100 to my name. You know, savings are completely gone, bankrupt. I live with my parents. If I have $100 in the bank at any given time, I'm doing pretty well. But so then, so I get that from Haneke, and this is like the end of 2013, early 2014. At the same time, in January 2014, under court order, the Archdiocese of St. Louis releases a list of allegations that they had received for a time period, including the 2002 allegation that I made to Bishop, now Cardinal Dolan, and Nancy Brown. It was an Excel spreadsheet, anonymized, but because of some details of the Valentine case, I was able to figure out that he was accused individual number 107. And my allegation was not in the matrix. The matrix that was mandated and produced under court order, civil action, that to me sounds like a criminal act. Perjury, obstruction of justice. But that was another, you know, example of gaslighting, something that just absolutely destroyed me, and it made me question my reality to the point where my mind is kind of seizing up on me because of how bizarre it was and how much it messed me up. And that was what ended up creating a problem with the statute of limitations, and why the lawsuit that I filed in October 2015 ended up having to be settled, because basically that 2 year period from 2013 to 2015, I was just destroyed psychologically, lost touch with reality, I believe by design, in order to create a problem with the statute of limitations. You know, it was just run around gaslighting. The Archdiocese would never do anything to help me. A couple times Hangen asked me for a treatment plan, but he never offered to pay for it. Dolan, at least when he referred me to the psychologist, you know, picked up the check for that session, so I didn't have to worry about it. Small favors. So I filed the lawsuit in October 2015. And I filed that with my parents as friends because of my psychological issues, because I have a tendency, or had a tendency, still have to a degree, to kind of flake out when I'm under stress and to just disappear for a period of months or even, you know, a year and a half, up to 2 years. So I filed the lawsuit with my parents as friends so that if I ended up, you know, kind of disappearing or getting triggered or freaked out, they could talk to my lawyers and continue with the lawsuit. The first motion the Archdiocese of St. Louis filed was to have my parents removed from the lawsuit as friends. Again, I put my parents on there for psychological, emotional support and to deal with the psychological realities of what I was dealing with and what the Archdiocese of St. Louis had done to me. And their first motion they filed when I filed my lawsuit was to remove that support system, to isolate me. I hope those actions of physically, psychologically isolating me make that picture more believable. This isn't a screw up, this is a strategy. This is an attempt to physically, psychologically isolate survivors with the hope that we'll just go away. You know, maybe the logic is on Archbishop Carlson's part is that, you know, this isn't his problem. I've run into NMPs, NIMPs, not my problem, people elsewhere, people I've tried to reach out to, different assistance coordinators in Chicago and Los Angeles, trying to get help from them and trying to get word up to the USCCB. But everybody is, the attitude is not my problem. Some of that's due to the structure of the diocese, but that's why I went to the USCCB, and that's why I went to the Papal Nuncio, and why I've also tried to get a letter through to the Pope. You know, it is the Pope's problem, ultimately. You know, problems with the bishops are the Pope's problem. But the attitude that I get is not my problem. And that, you know, I've seen that some in Father James Martin. That was how I first learned about him. He put out a tweet or a Facebook post asking people to pray for the bishops who were dealing with his problems, you know, most of which existed, you know, preceded them. I don't care if a problem precedes you. If it's in your lap, you know, I'll feel bad for you and I'll appreciate your efforts, but, you know, not my problem is not an adequate answer in general in life. And especially when you're talking about bishops of the Church of Jesus Christ, of the Catholic Church. Not my problem is an unacceptable answer for bishops of the Church of Jesus Christ, of the Catholic Church. It's unacceptable for them to pass the buck or to say, you know, it precedes me, it's not my problem. As I said, I ended up having to settle the lawsuit because of the problem with the statute of limitations. Ended up settling in September 2017. Got a small settlement, $15,000, $9,000 net. My lawyer asked for $100,000 and then $75,000 and then $50,000 to try to get money to pay for therapy. The Archdiocese never budged off of $15,000. So I took that small amount of money and invested it in a social media campaign, which you're seeing right now, the fruits of right now. Mostly done through Twitter, but now expanding out to YouTube. The idea trying to be to pressure the Archdiocese of St. Louis into doing the right thing. That gained energy in December 2017, when Cardinal Law died, and that massively triggered me because they talked about an assistance coordinator, the USCCB, in a press release memorializing Cardinal Law, talked about an assistance coordinator, which triggered me massively because I had spent years trying to get help from the Archdiocese of St. Louis from March 2002 up to December 2017 at that time, 15 years, and I had never been introduced to, contacted by, told to contact, or even told of the existence of an assistance coordinator. So that triggered me massively. But then within a month or so, my social media campaign started to pay off and I started to get some press attention, most notably from Aisha Sultan of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. So she started interviewing me for an article. At the same time that I was first talking to her, I was trying to alert the USCCB to the problems in the Archdiocese of St. Louis and was sending various emails to a contact at the USCCB and then also CCing various members of the Archdiocese of St. Louis. The first time I did that, I got an email back from Sandra Price, the director of the Office of Child and Youth Protection of the Archdiocese of St. Louis, basically admitting that it happened. She didn't say that directly, and she said it amongst a bunch of lies, but she ultimately ended up admitting that it happened. That I then sent her a couple of follow-up emails, basically asking her to just say, "Can you just say it happened?" Because, like I said, she did it amongst lies, and she admitted it in a very backhanded, legalistic way. And I asked her if she could just say that it happened. She ended up calling the police on me. She alleged to the Shrewsbury Police Department, this would be February of 2018, that I had made terroristic threats against the Archdiocese of St. Louis. No, I didn't. It was just an attempt. It was an attempt to intimidate me into silence. Then during Holy Week 2018, I sent her another email. Again, she called the police. This time, the police of Webster Groves. This would be April 2018. The Cardinals were playing, so this would be like the early April 2018. I was going to go see Carlos Martinez pitch in a day game, and then my mom called me and told me that there were two Webster cops who wanted to talk to me. So I turned around and ended up talking to them. Then at the end of April 2018, the Aisha Sultan piece ran. Again, another incident of abuse. Maybe it wasn't intended as this, but that was what happened to me. A spokesman for the Archdiocese of St. Louis basically told everybody in St. Louis that I was lying, that my story had changed. No, my story didn't change. It got a little bigger from 2002 to 2011, but of course, in the 2011 meeting, they told me they had no knowledge of my 2002 meeting. So if I only talked to them once in 2011, how could they know, much less say, that my story changed? It's just another example of gaslighting and psychological abuse, and they're trying to mess with me, to affect me, to make me just go away, to drive me crazy. I then ended up contacting Bishop Rick Sticca, who had been at the Archdiocese of St. Louis working under Cardinal Regali and then Cardinal Burke, asked him for help. He acted like it was very much like the Haneke thing. You know, the first conversation I had, he was very, sympathetic. Oh my gosh, let's see if we can get you some help. Then he called me back and he's like, yeah, no, we're not going to be able to do anything. It's terrible to when first Haneke and then Sticca led me on believing that they could or they would and could help me, and then they ended up not doing anything. That's the worst feeling, knowing that you're just being played with by these guys. They don't actually care. They pretend to care. But that's part of the psychological manipulation. Most recently, within the past few weeks, I started to realize that I had, I'd always thought, I've been seeing a therapist for 6 months. I always thought of eighth grade at Immaculata being a mess. But the truth was, it wasn't a mess. It was actually really quite good. I finished up grade school very well because Dolan was gone and Valentine was gone. Then I get into the high school, St. Louis U High and St. Louis Jesuit School. And within a week, it became obvious to me, I had thought I had dodged a bullet, that I was, you know, that I was finally free of this. And it immediately became obvious to me that St. Louis U High was not a safe environment because of the behavior of various Jesuits who would walk through the locker room and ogle us when we were in the shower. I only took maybe one or two showers at SLU. Per penalty of demerits and jugs, I'd rather be sweaty and get a demerit than take a shower at SLU. So I'm in the process of the Jesuits UCS, trying to get help for them as well, because there was also another incident that occurred senior year in Haiti with a Jesuit. But that was a very difficult process because to just talking to the Jesuits UCS and trying to get help through them was very difficult because I've talked about Deacon Phil Henkin, who ran the process for the Archdiocese of St. Louis. Well, it turns out he also runs the process for the Jesuits UCS. So I've got my main tormentor, the guy who I call Runaround Phil because his whole job was to gaslight me and give me the runaround and do everything he could to keep from helping me. First, he does it at the Archdiocese of St. Louis. Now he's doing it for the Jesuits, the UCS, United States Central and South Region. So I don't have a whole lot of hope of getting any help out of that process. But again, the reason I'm telling you all this is so that you understand as you, and that you can think about as you attend the Sex Abuse Summit in Rome in the next couple days, that you can think about and understand what the real problem is. The problem is much less the abuse of children. By and large, children are safer, at least in the United States, at least in St. Louis. Yes, those programs probably need to be rolled out worldwide, but it seems to me like Father Zollner is doing a good job with that. The real problem is the abuse of the abused. What happens, what is done to survivors of abuse when they go to the to their various archdioceses, to their diocese, their archdiocese, and try to get help? And if you don't believe me when I say that we are being ignored, just look at this picture.